Thank you for listening to episode 2 of Giving Credits. We have a pretty fun episode for you. I spoke to Cody Ziegler, who was the showrunner's assistant for Adult Swim. He's a director and podcast producer. He's part of the Upright Citizens Brigade community. He's had his work featured on Cracked, Funny or Die, Adult Swim, Hoo Ha Ha, Soul Pancake, College Humor, and BuzzFeed. As always, there will be links in the description to his website where you can check out his reel, see some of the things that he mentions in the podcast. Before I forget, we're officially on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and assorted podcast players. We also have a website. You can go to givingcredits.com. If you could rate, comment, and subscribe on iTunes, that would really mean a lot to us. It helps us pop up more frequently so more people can get into the podcast. And overall, the support we receive really makes us feel good. Anyway, that's pretty much it. I hope you enjoy the show, and let's give some credits. Ziegler, and Cody was a showrunner assistant for Adult Swim?
Correct, yes. Hired as a quote-unquote production intern.
Okay.
And through a series of like 6 interviews, I slowly realized that they just meant someone that they had to pay $8 an hour to be an assistant.
Oh, man.
So the main show I was hired for was season 2 of Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell, which was ran by Casper Kelly, who did Too Many Cooks, and Dave Willis, who created Aqua Teen and Squidbillies.
I love Too Many Cooks.
It was weird. Like, they wrapped that like 2 weeks before I got there, and they were just talking about, like, there's this weird thing we're trying to figure out. It's about a show that never really launches. It's just like an intro for 11 minutes. And I was like, oh, that sounds very much like an Adult Swim idea.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see how it turns out. But Dave Willis also does voices for Carl and Meatwad on Aqua Teen. And I think that he does, well, I know that he does, Early, I think that's the main squid's name on Squidbillies.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the show in a while.
Yeah, same.
Sorry, Dave. But yeah, but that was the main job. So like, it was pretty cool because like, you were just like, basically I went through, like I said, 6 interviews, like just basically going up the food chain of like, here's the production coordinator, Eddie Ray, who still I put on job applications because like he helped me get so many jobs.
Yeah, totally.
And then it was a person that, you know, when you get an internship and you have like a coordinator that you have to go through to talk to your school, it was that person.
Right.
Then it was like a random phone interview that I was not expecting. That I just got a call out of the blue from an Atlanta number. I was like, oh, maybe I should answer this.
Yeah.
That shocked me because I was not prepared.
Yeah.
And then it became like the head of production, Vasal Rooney. And then finally, it was a chat with producer Matt Foster. Matt Foster.
Yeah.
And Dave and Chris. And I remember at that point, like I had honed my responses to just like this, this is what I can do, this is what my experiences are, these are shows I like, blah 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 blah. And I remember Dave was like, well, you got any more questions? And I was like, yeah, when will you tell me if I got hired? And he was like, that's a good question to have in your brain, maybe not to say out loud. And then like I was like, oh yeah, you're maybe right. And then like I got an email like 30 minutes later saying I got hired.
That's crazy.
It was like one of the most fun experiences I've had, like going through a round of interviews. Like,
yeah,
their questions were like, what's your 3 favorite cartoon ducks? Like, what's like your favorite anime? Like, what's your favorite hip hop album? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
It fit the mood of totally what the environment was like at
right.
the swim.
How did you get to the first interview? Like, did you apply like outside, or was it through like someone you knew?
Well, I went to the Savannah College of Art and Design,
okay.
also known as SCAD, for their grad film program. It's based in Savannah, Georgia, obviously, which is like a 4-hour drive from Atlanta. So like,
yeah.
Like a lot of production companies that are based in Atlanta were like, hey, this is this place that we'll go to farm talent, which would be the normal trajectory. But what happened was one of my friend's sisters at the time was like, well, she's still a sister. She's still my friend. I don't know why I added at the time.
Yeah.
They don't need to add that descriptive. But one of my friend's sister was like, hey, one of my friends at Adult Swim says that they have an internship, but the due date is tonight at midnight. Do you want to apply? I was like, oh, yeah, I do. And then I remember I ran to the computer lab, typed up, I think I had like a paragraph for my cover letter.
Yeah.
And I ended it by saying, I love you. And then I put together my resume, which was a film school resume. So it wasn't even like a real resume. It was
right.
Like,
it's like some shorts.
Yeah. Some shorts that I gripped on, a couple of things that I directed. I sent my reel, which was garbage at the time, and some projects. And I had like, what saved me was that when I was there, my whole thing was like, all right, I need to make what I want to be as a writer director. That's the thing that I want to do for
right.
a living. But I know that I need to have like a skill set to pay while I do that. So like I spent my entire time, if I wasn't on set directing something, I was on set as an AC or a camera person.
Right.
So like my camera knowledge was just stacked with every camera that you, that was popular at the time. It's like all the Canon line, like all the Reds, Alexas, all that stuff. So like when I got hired, my primary job, outside of doing like the basic, like, hey, can you get coffee or can you schedule this or can you email this person, was also on set doing all the behind the scenes photography and videography.
Oh, cool.
So I was like, oh, yeah, I can do a 5D. Like, I can do this in my sleep.
Yeah.
It's like most of my job on set was doing like photography, which was like, oh, great. Here's my photography site that I did photography for too.
Right.
It was a very non-traditional job.
That's awesome. You know, people who don't know what those steps are, for most people, like, oh, just shoot something. But obviously, there's a lot of steps that you have to take along the way. So did you know that being like a showrunner's assistant, was that something that...
It was. I remember, I'm trying to think back because I knew that it was a good step. Because first of all, let me just say that as a kid, like, I remember Toonami came out when I was like 12 or 13 and then like tacked on Adult Swim onto it. And I remember as a kid and like the first years of high school, I'm like, I love this. I want to do this. I didn't know that you could work. I didn't know people got paid to make money doing comedy.
Yet. Right.
But I remember as a kid being like, my dream job at 14 was like, I want to work at Adult Swim. So just getting a job there was like, oh, this is it. Like,
yeah.
I can move back to Bump. Can you curse on the show?
Yeah.
I can move back to Bumfork, North Carolina and never have to do anything ever again. I'm set.
Right.
But in film school, I remember talking with a couple of friends and being like, this is what I want to do. I want to work in comedy. Like, there's not really a lot of comedy scene. There's not really a big comedy scene in the South. Like, there's literally, like, Adult Swim, one thing that's, like, doing what I want to do.
Right.
And, like, everyone at that time was, like, my circle of director friends were like, I need to get an agent. I need to do this, this, and this. I was like, I don't know about any of that stuff. I just know that if I want to be a director, it seems like working for the shows that I want to work on the directors that I like should be, like, a good step, you know?
Yeah.
And, you work in production, too, so you know there's no, like, straight line to do what you want to do.
There's no set path.
Yeah, there's no set path, but I knew that, one, I wanted to just learn under them. Like, I have a big love of education and, like, learning, and I'm a big, big proponent of the idea of the master-apprenticeship relationship, which I think is sort of faded out in the arts, which is really strange to me, especially in, like, this art form, which is, I feel like, especially with anything creative, like, being a cinematographer or a director or a producer or a writer, like, you have a unique style that's all sort of crafted by, like, your influences and also, like, your own life experiences. And I like the idea of, like, passing that down to, like, a lineage. Like, that's really cool to me. That's a metaphysical concept that I'm really into. And, like, I knew that I get to work under two directors that have already influenced me, like, writing wise and, like, style of humor wise, but, like, being able to watch their process and being able to see them handle stuff on set and also being able to, like, just bullshit with them in their offices was super informative. And it also set a precedent to be like, you know, if you're in the environment that I was at in film school, I felt like there was this weird like military, well, I'm sure it's like this too, where like there's this weird like pseudo military vibe where you have to like break the lower people on the rungs, or they have to pay their dues, which you do have to pay your dues, but like there's this weird like unhealthy like almost like toxic masculinity aspect to it. And like I wasn't about that. Like that's not fun to me. Like I don't want to make a PA cry because he got my coffee order wrong. That's really strange to me.
Yeah, like you see that on TV and movies like a lot where people are like, "Oh, I got to literally be destroyed if I want to succeed in this career." Was it at all like that? Were they just real cool people?
They were all super cool people. Like I had PA'd stuff before. So, like, I had some general on-set experience, like, but it wasn't a lot of stuff. Like, I did, like, a couple of days on a reality show and a few commercials, and that was, like, it for me. I was like, all right, I made a paycheck. Like, I don't want to be on set for 16 hours. Like, that's not fun unless I'm doing something that is actually productive, I think, towards the set. Not to say that PAs aren't, because, like, they're like, emptying all the trash cans. They're, like, coordinating people. Like, they're handling, like, making sure pedestrians aren't walking through the middle of your shot. Like, the important stuff. But what I meant was, like, it wasn't worth the stress for me personally. But to answer your question, everyone there was super cool, like, because they had gone through the same experiences. Like, Dave started out as a PA. Like, he worked on a bunch of, like, Cartoon Network stuff. And then one day they were like, hey, we're putting together this writer's room. Do you want to submit a package? He's like, yeah, sure, I'll submit something. And that was, they ended up forming the original Space Ghost Coast to Coast.
Oh, wow.
So, like, and even the guy that runs the network, Laszlo, like, he started out in the mailroom. So, like, everyone there has, like, understands being, like, the bottom person on the rung on the ladder. So, like, there was that sort of vibe of, like, oh, we are all learning this together. And, like I said, there was this sort of, like, apprenticeship type thing. We're like, hey, do you have any questions? What do you want to learn? Like, I remember we were at a bar one time, and Dave was like, are you learning anything? I was like, yeah, I'm learning a lot. All right, good. Just making sure it's worth it. You know, so they were really cool about it. And the entire office is cool as well. It's what you would expect. Like, so we're William Street, a.k.a. Adult Swim, but also known as William Street. There's William Street, a highway, and then, like, where, like, Turner Broadcasting is proper, which who owns Adult Swim.
Yeah.
And you could literally tell who worked at Adult Swim because they're all, like, sort of pale. Like, they wear, like, flannel.
Yeah.
They look like they probably just got rolled out of bed from, like, a punk show that they played. And then you go across the street and everyone's in, like, business suits and very proper, nice haircuts and stuff. You're like, oh, yeah, we're the rejects. It makes total sense why the vibe of this office is, like, the way that it is. They have a lot of freedom, like... It's corporate-y just in the way that you need to be like, hey, I need a thing moved. All right, call the moving department and they'll move your chair like an office over. Like, that's the funny part. Like, that would be like the funny corporate things or like the shredder machine's not working. I guess we got to call the tech department to get to send the dudes over here to do the thing. Like, that was always fun. But the vibe itself was always super cool, super amicable. The set was super nice. It was cool. It was sort of a small crew for what we were doing. It was, I think we shot for like 24 days for the first block of season two.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if the crew was more than 50 people. Like, it was a pretty small crew.
Yeah.
Everyone there was generally pretty nice. I really enjoyed being assistant just because I got there when they got there, and when they called cut, I could go home.
Yeah.
So, like, I love that aspect of having, like...
You didn't have to rap.
Yeah, that was really the best part that I enjoyed the most. It was, like, I loved having, like, a 10-hour day instead of a 14-hour day.
For real, yeah.
It was also cool being able to see them... Like, because you're in Video Village, usually, or at least I got to be because I was their assistant or whatever. Being able to see them hammer out jokes was really cool. And I guess now, if you direct comedy, it's a pretty standard fare of like, oh, we'll roll and I'll yell out pitches for jokes.
Yeah.
Like that makes sense now. But then, like, I didn't know that's how you did that. I didn't know that you could just, like, oh, yeah, we can just roll. And if this joke's not working, I can just literally write a new joke right now.
Yeah, or
and,
like, improvise something.
Yeah, and improvise something because we have an amazing cast that are all super funny and are also improvisers, so like they can take these jokes and make them work.
Yeah. Were you on set like all the time, or were you mostly in the office?
Yeah, I was on set for 24 days. I think I may have had a sick day. I think I got really sick and I missed one day, but generally I was there every day. For a good 2.5 weeks, Dave's car died, so I had to take him to... I would pick him up and take him to work.
That's funny.
That was really funny because like be driving at like, you know, 7 a.m. or whatever and have like... Adult Swim would make these playlists for Spotify, so like I would have one playing and like he started rapping his meat wad like while we're sitting in traffic, which is like super fun and super cool. But yeah, I was there for every day except for the one day that I missed. And every now and then I would need to like do bullshit like, hey, can you run this hard drive over to the VX company? Like, yeah, sure, whatever. I'm getting paid to drive in Atlanta and listen to music. Yeah, sure, I can do that. Yeah, stuff like that. But yeah, I was on set every day and was just like watching their process and like just learning how to become a better director, but also learning how to become like a good assistant and what they look for.
Yeah. But what did you like least about the job? I think that'd be interesting.
Least? It, you know what's funny? It wasn't tied directly to the production. It was tied to, it was a person at the actual company.
Okay.
It was this editor who, Lear Bunda, I will shout him out. It was such a strange dynamic. It was, have you had internships before? Or
yeah.
You know when you meet that one person who, you can tell that they're the person that like likes to abuse the interns, or like to have like the power
take
dynamic?
Advantage.
Yeah, I remember there was this moment where like all the interns were hitting like the bullpen talking with, there are these things called T3s, which is like a Turner thing where like, basically if you're freshly out of school, it's been 2 years since you've graduated, it's almost like you're hired as like, this is like, you're going to get paid for 12 months as a contractor. It's going to be like your first job in like the field. So you can get some experience where like you have more responsibilities than an intern, but like we're not going to shoulder you with a bunch of stuff. Like you almost get paid to shadow someone, basically what the job was.
Yeah.
So it was us sitting with them. Leard came up and he was like, hey, Zig, can you help me out with something? I was like, oh yeah, sure. What do you need, man? You're an editor. Yeah, I can like, because we talked about like maybe me cutting an episode because like I had experiences, which I guess in hindsight, it's crazy that you would ask an intern to cut a show, but whatever. But he was like, hey, I need you to do something for me. Like, yeah, cool, whatever. And I go into his office, and he's like, hey, can you hang this up? And it was like a little guitar holder. Like, I'm pointing at the guitar holder that I have right now in my office, but it was basically a holding guitar on the wall. I was I guess I could do that. But literally, the energy that you spent walking across the hallway to get me to do this, whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember I put it up. I had like a little Sharpie to like mark the holes. He was like, hey, don't be putting Sharpies on my wall. And I was like, Are you crazy right now?
You're about to like drill into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I was about to. I was like, yo, dude, like people can't see me, but like I'm a big dude. I'm like 6'4". This guy was like 5'3". Like he looked like an editor. And I was like, I don't like this job enough not to whoop your ass right now. But I was thinking I didn't say that.
Right,
like,
right.
And I remember like I put it in. I made sure it was straight. And then like I left. And I went back to the pool. I was talking. And he came back over and like he tapped me on the shoulder. He's like, you're not done yet. And I was like, dude, what's up, B? And like we walked back over. He wanted me to literally take the guitar off his couch and put it on the wall.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And I was like, yo, dude, I don't know if you know me like that, but like I will fuck you up. Like yeah. I'm not going to do this for you. Like I'm not here to be like your like handyman.
Right. You're not even his
yeah, it's like, yeah,
assistant.
Yeah. Like... I'm not your assistant. Also, you're a contractor. Like you don't even technically work for this place. What are
That's
you doing?
That's crazy.
Yeah. But like that was the guy that like people in the office had their qualms about that dude. And I don't think he actually works there anymore. So yeah. Shout out that dude. But that was... what you experience at any job, like just interpersonal stuff, like that wasn't like that was really the worst thing. And maybe like post set sadness where you're like, man, I just spent 30 days on set with a bunch of funny people and now I'm back in the office and now I'm just like sort of answering emails. Like
right.
That sucked. Like that was really it was just like a person in the office that was sort of a dick to me. Like that was really
yeah.
the worst thing that happened there.
That is so weird.
It was so strange. Like I was like, I don't like, do you, Are we in like a cartoon movie right now? Like,
right.
Why are you acting like this?
Is this like a joke or something?
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, oh, you're doing a bit, but it was not a bit. And I was like, yo, I'm not here for this, man. I'm just letting you know right now.
Jesus Christ. Okay. How did you organize your time then? I mean, I'm guessing it's pretty eclectic from like day to day. Like, did you have kind of like a routine going or?
It was, let me think about this. It was definitely something that I got prepped for going to SCAD because the whole joke is that SCAD stands for sleep comes after death. So it was like wake up at like 5:30, go grab Dave, have some coffee with him at his house, drive to set, look at the sides, like, all right, we're doing 5 pages today or whatever we were doing. So
yeah.
Like that was a general thing. Like, all right, I know I'm gonna get the set and basically I'm just gonna be walking around taking pictures and videos. If I need to go on a Starbucks run, I'm only going to do it for my two immediate bosses, which was great.
Yeah.
So, like, that was it. And then, like, we get lunch, shoot the shit, go back to the director's office and, like, just hang out and, like, offload all the photos that I've been taking, organize everything. And then that's usually when they're like, hey, can you run this back to William Street or can you run this to the VX office or whatever? So, like, I may go on, like, a very small run and then come back, shoot, wrap, go home, watch. It was really weird. Watch some Adult Swim shows for fun.
Right.
And then go to sleep and go back to do that. That was like my Monday through Friday. But I was also working at my thesis at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So like we'd wrap on Friday. I'd drop Dave off. Then I'd drive 4 hours to Savannah, Georgia. Wake up Saturday at like 11. Do all my prep for my thesis. Do all that stuff. Wrap. Leave Sunday night. Drive back to work and did that for like 2 months.
Okay.
Yeah. So like... I mean, I got used to it. Like, I'm a night owl anyway, and
yeah.
I can operate on, like, little amounts of sleep. And also,
okay.
I generally liked what I was doing.
Right.
So it didn't feel like, oh, I got to drive to my amazing job that I've been wanting to do for the past 15 years. Yeah. You know?
So, like, watching Adult Swim, like, while you were working there, was that different for you when you started working there?
You know, it's funny, because I've had this conversation with other people. Before we started rolling, Matt Walsh just walked in, and we've had this conversation before about how, like, when you're in comedy and it becomes, like, what you do for a living, like, I get paid to be funny or at least funny adjacent. I stop laughing at things. I'll be like, oh, that's funny. And, like, I'll be like, no, that is legitimately a funny thing.
Yeah.
But, like, it's very rare for me to laugh at something.
Yeah.
If I laugh at something, that's how I know it's really good. But for Adult Swim, since their shows have no, there's structure, but it's, you have no idea what's coming. Like, one thing that I enjoyed is that I would still laugh at stuff because I didn't have no idea what was coming, even if I had read the script
yeah.
or I had heard them talking about bits or, like, I even recorded or I had set in for a recording of something. Like, that was still fun. I think it was also, like, just having a sense of, like, pride in what you were making. You're like, oh, I just spent all day hanging out with all these people on set making this thing. I'm going to come home and watch this stuff because I love the stuff that I'm making so much that,
yeah.
like, I can not have myself attached to stuff while I'm watching it.
Totally. That's awesome, man. Well, what advice would you give to someone who either like wants to start off or is an assistant and wants to be mm-hmm. like a real good assistant?
You know, I think a thing that definitely helped me was I think I'm naturally sort of an empathic person.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely get affected by other people's emotions.
Yeah.
I can read people, I think, pretty well at this point, which I think also just helps being a director, like being able to read someone and being
yeah.
able to like suggest some like, you know, office rejections to direct them. But I think being attentive, memorizing things, like just being able to anticipate stuff and being able to, you know, flow, go with the flow. Like I still have, Casper Kelly's Starbucks order memorized.
What is it?
Triple mock, because he wouldn't put mocky. Triple mock with skim milk, I think, was what he would get. And Dave Willis always just got like a black, straight black coffee, no yeah. sugar, no cream. Like stuff like that. Also, learning when to just shut up. Like I think that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I mean, you learning can use that when, in anything.
Yeah, just like don't talk. If there's a voice in your head, just be like. That's it. Like Dave says, it's a good thought for your brain,
yeah,
not necessarily for your mouth. Like, because there's a lot of, like, because when you're in those environments, there's a lot of times when it's like department heads are like talking about things and they're talking things over,
yeah.
And like maybe in your mind, you're like, oh, this is the moment where I pitch that perfect idea, and the room all turns and they applaud and they make me CEO of the company. don't just shut up and yeah. let them figure it out. Take notes, and maybe in the back of your mind, be like, oh, I would pitch this that way. Maybe when that moment comes, when they do turn to you on set, you're like, hey, what do you think about this? You can offer some advice. Because I had that happen, which was, and again, another crazy thing that probably would never happen anywhere else. But,
yeah.
So Casper and Dave are co-directors, so like they direct scenes at the same time. And I think Dave had to leave one day to like take his kid to dinner or something like that. And I remember it was just Casper, and he was like, hey, what do you think of this shot? And I was like, that's a good framing. It's a good shot. This is a solid wide shot. He's like, yeah, I think so too. And I was like, did I just direct this show?
You know, like, do I get co-director?
Yeah. So, hey, move out the way, Kath, but let me show you how it's done. Like, things like that are definitely super important. Like, being attentive, being, I think, emotionally, being able to read someone, learning when to shut the fuck up is also super helpful. And also, just being a good person helps. Like, you know, like you're on set, hour seven hits, and you're like, do I want to be around this person? If the answer is yes, that makes things so much easier.
Yeah.
Like, it's from my own personal experience. Like, I'd much rather work with someone who may not be technically the best employee, but they're a good person to be around. Like,
yeah.
I want to be around that person hour 10 when it's raining when it's raining and like you got to wait inside for it to pass and like you're about to hit like what's a golden hour or whatever it's called. And you're like, oh shit, is this person annoying me or are they cool? Like, that's another super helpful thing.
Right. Right. First episode, we talk about that, like finding your tribe is kind of a thing where it's like,
yeah, that's a good phrase. Yeah.
Yeah. Finding like the people who, like, you know, this person, they might need to work on, like, you know, finding the right frame or something, or like some sort of technical thing. You can always get that later on. You can always like learn that.
But, yeah. Yeah.
But definitely, I feel like finding the people that you vibe with and connect with. Did you have a pitch in mind? I wanted to ask.
A pitch for.
For when you were working there, like, were you like, man, I got this thing I really want to.
It was funny that you say that. No, but there's something that happened afterwards. So, like, in the show, You're Pretty Face, there's a lot of puppetry. There's a lot, especially that season. I can't speak for the later seasons.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of, like, puppetry involved, which is super cool seeing, like, someone put on, like, this giant foam costume and they become, like, an 8-foot-tall cyclops.
Yeah.
Which is super just fucking rad. But I got inspired by that to make a puppet thing of my own. And I remember after I finished it, like, a puppet short, and I finished it. And I remember I was like, man, I always want to have this. If I did this for real, I want to have this person from the show on it. Because there's this, our number two on the call sheet was this dude named Craig Rowan.
Hmm.
And after this, I'm going to circle back. This is all going the same place. Okay. Don't worry, folks. I am leading you there. After we had wrapped the show, we were at the wrap party. And I was like, hey, I want to get into comedy proper. What should I do? He was like, well, first of all, back up. You're a little drunk. second of all, you should check out, like, Groundlings or IO or UCB, which is what I do.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, cool. And then I moved to LA and I did that. And so this puppet short that I was inspired to do, I did it. And then we started doing a live stage show of it here at UCB. And like for our last show, Craig Rowenson was in town and like we got him to do the show with us, which is super cool.
Yeah.
I was like, man, I would like, so my pitch was I want to do something with this dude. And then we got to do something with that dude like a year later down the road. And damn. I was like, oh, that is super cool. That's super. It's always weird and like serendipitous when things and surreal when like people that you meet come back together later down the line after you've started to establish yourself in your career. Like, that's the stuff that I live for. Like, I love things like that. It seems like the work that you're putting in is paying off, but also it seems like there's this weird like metaphysical thing where everyone's connected and we're all just sort of floating through the world at the same time.
Yeah. I relate to that because of UCB, mm-hmm. where like I used to like come and watch shows, and this was before I took any classes.
Yeah.
And then like you do the classes and you do some of the graduation shows and you're like, I'm in the green room.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and you get that feeling where like other people have been in this room, and it's like, I could be in this room with these people.
Yeah.
Further down the line. And that to me is.
It's funny you say that. I think we were talking before we started recording about listening to podcasts like, on the way to work. When I first moved out here like 3 years ago, I was working this terrible, terrible editing gig in Westwood. And I was driving from like basically Highland Park every day. It's like an hour and 15 minutes, hour and 30 commute both ways. And I would listen to this podcast called Spontaneation with Paula Tompkins. It's like this improv podcast.
Yeah.
Every Monday, I remember every Monday it dropped because I would be so miserable driving to work. And that show kept me like sane for the 4 months that I had that terrible job. Like I'd work the job.
Yeah.
I'd come home. I was staying at a friend's house who didn't have a bed. So I slept on like a cot. Like my upstairs neighbor just had like a kid. So the kid would cry.
Oh,
and my other neighbor was an opera singer. So like you would have like legitimately you wake up on a Sunday at 7 o'clock to like someone doing la 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 la. And then like a kid's crying. And I'd be like, you know what? I'm going to give it 6 months. If I didn't make it, I'm going to move back to North Carolina.
Yeah.
But flash forward, like yesterday, a podcast that I produced, we had Paula Tompkins in as a guest.
That's
and
awesome.
I got to do improv with him. And I was like, this is insane. Like, this is like, I'm done now. Like, I've done all that I need to do out here comedy-wise. Like, 3 years ago, sleeping on a cot, listening to the show to stay sane. And, like, flash forward 3 years, and, like, I get to do something with, like, one of the people that I idolized.
That's insane.
I think one of the things that helped moving out to L.A., and I don't know if you're from L.A. yourself, but when you move out here, things become achievable. You're like, oh, I can visualize how you can become like a writer, or I can visualize how you can become a producer, or I can visualize how you become a DP or director. Like you said, there's no straight path, but you start seeing like the matrix code. You're like, all right, these are like things that I can do to get the thing that I need to do, or network and meet these people and like get the shot, get to the place where I can take that shot.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I think about that all the time. I mean, I'm from Miami, so I moved here like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And like when I first moved here, I wasn't doing anything.
Yeah.
Like I was like, I want to do film, but I didn't know where to start. And then now I'm at the point where I produced, I'm producing my third feature.
Yeah.
I've done some shorts. I've done some other stuff, but I can see that path. Like you're saying, I'll be like, oh man, if I just talk to the right person.
Yeah.
You work with people and then they recommend you for the right set or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're like, okay, yeah, I can totally see myself working on a real huge set.
Yeah.
Like Hollywood stuff.
Yeah.
And that's like the way I feel about like, and UCB too, like as an improviser, like I'm just like, yeah, like I'm doing really good in this class. Like I can see myself on stage doing ASCAT.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's funny because it sounds crazy if you say it to anyone out loud. But
yeah.
Like, no, I think another important thing to have, not just in assistant work, but anything that you do that's especially creative, is like the idea of like supreme confidence, being like being able to like, all right, these are my weaknesses, I need to fix these things, but also being able to say to yourself, you know what, I'm good. Like I have much room for improvement, but like I'm competent and confident in my abilities at the stage that I'm at right now. And I could definitely see myself getting to this particular stage if I continue to put in the hard work.
Yeah, so what would you say would be, like, the next step for you, if you could visualize that?
I think next step, so that was, when was season two? I think season two was, like, 2014, so I guess that was, maybe it's 15. Yeah, 15, so I guess that was 3 years ago. So my next step was sort of doing what I'm doing now, which is, like, all right, I moved to L.A., I was lucky, and I got a job working at a dope comedy spot after like 4 months of being here.
Yeah.
And then after I got the job there, which is UCB, a year in, I got a producing gig, podcast producing. So like just through that, I got to meet a bunch of really awesome people that I really enjoy, like more established people, like of course like Matt Walsh and Scott Armstrong, who wrote all of my favorite comedy movies in like the early 2000s, and is still doing awesome stuff. She's got some cool stuff in the pipeline. But then just like meeting people that are in their world, like so getting to meet dudes like Paul F. Tompkins or Jason Mantzoukas, or even like dudes like Brad Morris, who is one of the funniest improvisers that like I've ever met, that guy, and like just becoming friends with these people and being able to like pick their brains about things. And then also getting to the spot where you can you can cold email with confidence, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like I've like over the past like 3 or 4 weeks, I've just been shooting out emails and having like basically just doing Facebook status. Like, hey, I'm looking to meet some comedy directors who have brains I can pick. And
yeah.
Like, since I'm sort of not established, but like people know me and like people can like vouch for me, like, oh, this guy's not a wacko. Like they can meet with me and they can like pick their brains. I can be like, hey, can I shadow you on your set for your cool show that I love watching? And like, yeah, you can do that. Or into the point now where like you start getting meetings or like doing the whole water bottle tour, which is a whole another skill set that they don't teach you how to do. You just have to learn while you do it.
Can you go into that one?
Yeah, sure, totally. So for those who don't know, a water bottle tour is just like, this is a fun term that we call general meetings, which is like, say for instance, you get brought into, for me it was, I got brought into Big Breakfast, aka College Humor.
Yeah.
Because me and a buddy did a web series when we first got it here, super low budget, shot on a green screen. The whole premise was like, almost like our version, like an Eric Andre show. Like we bring in some improvisers, we don't tell them what's going on, and we shoot two takes on a 5D, so we get 12 minutes total. So we shoot 24 minutes of footage, edit down to like the funniest 4 minutes, and like this is the show. So we got through that, we got meetings at Funny or Die and like Funny or Die, College Humor, Fox Digital or whatever their digital thing was placed, even here at UCB and a couple other places. And the whole reason that they call it a water bottle tour is because you come in and the first thing they hit you with, it's usually an assistant or receptionist like being like, hey, do you want coffee or water? And you're like, all right, I want water. All right, what kind of water? It's like, just any type of water. Do you want Fiji? Do you want sparkling? Do you want this kind? Like, just give me the first bottle that you take and I'll do it. I'll just take that water bottle. I don't even care.
Yeah.
It all tastes the same to me. So yeah. So you get into the meeting and they generally follow these same beats as like, I don't know if you've had any yourself, but like you get in there, you shoot the shit for like 10, 15, like, hey, how do you know John? Oh, it's funny. He was in my 201 improv class. Oh, really? Who'd you take? I took Dave Tooney. Oh, I don't know Dave Tooney, but I saw him in this great thing, blah, blah, blah. You talk a little bit. And then finally they're like, let me tell you what we do here. And then like you go into the spiel and then they talk about, then they ask you, hey, what do you guys do? Like, what was the show about? How did you guys make it? What else are you working on? Like, what's your general vibe? It's really almost like you meet someone, they're meeting you to be like, hey, in a year or two, when a thing comes down the pipeline, would you want to do it? Like, are you a cool person? Are you not a wacko? Like,
right.
Are you not going to, like, just waste money if we gave you $25,000 to make a thing? Could you make it competently? That's the vibe that I've gotten from those meetings.
Yeah.
So you do that, and then you leave, and then you go to another place. And, like, it's almost like it's a weird balance between, like, job interview and friend interview.
Yeah.
Because like Funny or Die was the one that was like the most surreal, because like I remember I was just by myself for that one, but like I parked in like their parking garage. I took the elevator down and it opens up to like the lot. So like I open the door and there's like literally grips moving like glass planes, and
yeah,
like
there's just like points.
Yeah, points, and there's like drip trucks and stuff and people on golf carts being like, oh, channel 1, channel 2. And like I'm just walking around and be like, am I in a movie right now? What's going on? But like, yeah, you go in and you shoot the shit and like sometimes they'll look at your reel. I found like the most useful thing that I've had to do is just like send them my 3 favorite things. It may have been your best 3 things, but like, yo, I'll still watch the shit and laugh. So I'll just send that.
Yeah.
And we were talking a little bit about UCB, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I think when it comes to directing, I've definitely found myself leaning a lot more towards the Adult Swim style, which is like none of those guys are trained. I remember talking with Dave one time. He was like, I didn't go to classes. I don't know anything about that. I barely know how a camera works. I just know what's funny. So like a lot of my comedy, especially my videos, are like, yeah, we lean into the dumb shit. Like that's fun for me. Like I like laughing from my gut. Like I think one of the most universal comedy bits is, you know, the Three Stooges, like someone slipping on a banana peel is funny in any language. Like you don't have to heighten that. Or I guess you can heighten that, but like you don't need to like break down what's the base reality of this. Or like,
right,
let's unpack why he slipped on that banana. It's like, no, it's funny. Like Sideshow Bob stepping on 7 rakes. That's funny as hell to me. Like I can watch that all day, every day. And like, it's going to be almost timeless because it's very dumb and from the gut.
Yeah.
And with UCB or any, I think academic school institution, it's like, there needs to be some like intellectualism to it. There needs to be some smartness to it, which that works. That can definitely work. And I think it's cool when people can blend those two. But like the video that got me the meeting at Funny or Die was this 56-second video that I shot with my buddy Rob Gentile. We were like, hey, we hate digital garbage. So it's like any of those garbage, like, hey, it's me. Hey, it's Brockhampton 37. I'm outside this let's go inside and puke on some shit. Like, hey, I just hate those videos. So yeah. Like, let's make a video that's like the top 100 places in LA to throw up. And we literally just went to 100 random spots in LA and we just had Rob throw up into those places. Like, and that got me a meeting at that's been actually my most successful video in getting meetings.
That's crazy.
like I just made a really dumb video that I thought was really fun.
Yeah.
And we just got into the right hands. And they're like, hey, come in and let's talk to this person.
Damn, that's awesome. Man, I started looking at that one and I was like, this is crazy.
Yeah, it was so dumb. We were like, and also it's awesome. It's weird because it took us like 4 weekends to shoot.
Oh my god.
Because we would go from like, we'd go to like the Scientology Center, then we'd go to like downtown. I think we threw up on Trump Star. No one said anything. It was just wild because downtown or like Hollywood is just crazy to begin with. But like, yeah, like that, like that's been probably my most successful video as far as like getting meetings and stuff.
Man, okay. What would you say? Do you have any dream gigs?
Yeah, the ultimate dream goal, like basically what this all is building towards is like, I do want to have a show on Adult Swim. Like I want to run a show on Adult Swim. Like that's always been the end goal. And like, you know, everything is sort of like steps to get there. Like the whole idea is like, oh, you'd get a job like directing for like Cracked or Funny or Die or whatever. And then like, oh, that's just a place for you to like learn and network and get the next gig, which would be like, maybe you can direct like a more long form digital series, like Bajillion Dollar Properties or basically anything that Alex Ferney is doing right now. Like, yeah. I love that. I love his career. Like, that's a great step to get to the place, which is where I'd want to be, which is like getting a show at Adult Swim. So it's definitely a long game. I don't think it's something that you can just get overnight.
Right.
But that is definitely the end goal. And everything that I'm doing right now is sort of putting in those 10,000 hours. I feel like for me personally, like it resets. Like once you level up, I feel like. Yeah. Once you get to a certain set, like, all right, let's reset this. Now you got to put in 10,000 more. And even when you get that thing that you think that you want, like it's not done. Like the goalpost is always moving. Like,
yeah.
Even I'm sure you know this just from improvising, like, all the best improvisers are still constantly learning. You're never like, you know, like, oh, well, I'm the best director now, or like, whoop, I'm the best comedian. Like, it's always going to be a process of learning and reinventing yourself and like seeing how things change. Because I think that just goes inherently with any art form. Like, you're not like, oh, I'm the best guitarist now, I guess I should hang it up. You know?
Right. There's always something you can master more, like, push it to a new boundary.
Yeah. And I think that there's this really great line from Last Jedi.
Okay.
There's a line that Yoda says, whereas the burden of all masters is having students that surpass you. Basically, the idea is like every next generation is going to be better than the current generation. That's just the process of like evolving and like having all those skill sets. And that's definitely something that I attach myself to, is that even if I'm just still lucky enough to be around in like 20 years doing the thing that I want to do, I should definitely be prepared and open to the idea of like the new class being able to just blow my ass out of the water.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy because we're lucky in our generation, we don't have to deal with film.
Yeah.
You know, like some people still shoot on film. Yeah. Like I know a lot of people that do it like artistically. Yeah. I mean, especially for doing a TV show, you can't really mess up back then.
It's funny that you say that about film. I feel like, I mean, I love film too. I'll shoot on it when I can, which is not very often, but I feel like there's just the idea of like accessibility. It's just like by digital, like you give access to everyone that can even afford like a cell phone. Like one of my big things is I'm really into the idea of like giving the art to the people.
Mm-hmm.
And as a very small gatekeeper here, but I am a gatekeeper. Like I love the idea of giving people the shot or helping them out and all about accessibility. I love that there's a 10-year-old kid in like Nebraska who's making a thing on their phone.
Yeah.
Like I love the idea that there's probably a group of friends right now that just moved to LA 2 weeks ago. And they're like, let's shoot a feature on our like 5Ds. It's going to be garbage, but so what? They made the thing.
You know? Exactly.
And I love the idea. I love the accessibility that digital gives, and especially in the current landscape you're seeing now where you can just make a YouTube page and just like, all right, here's an audience now. We just made a YouTube page, or we just made a Facebook page. Come watch our thing.
Yeah, I mean, I was able to attend this discussion panel with Nate Moore.
Oh, cool.
For anyone who doesn't know, he's one of the executive producers of Marvel. He executive produced Black Panther. And one of his advice to people was, I actually asked the question, what kind of advice would you give to people starting out? And he's like, just put it out there.
Yeah.
Like literally just do whatever idea you have, put it out there, put it on Vimeo. He said those reels get around.
Yeah.
And that's also like why like this podcast was kind of started, thinking about all those people like Nebraska, Florida, anywhere who's that doesn't really have like a Hollywood or an Atlanta or something. Maybe it's not directing or writing for them, but maybe it's like, I don't know, gripping or DP or something like that.
No, that's, I'm totally with that. Yeah, that's one of the, how the reasons that I got into podcasting was just like, I just want to make a thing with friends that is immediate and doesn't have a large a large investment I need to make monetarily.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, I mean, for even this podcast, like, I like, borrowed a recorder.
Yeah.
Like, that my girlfriend has, and I was like, I'm just going to ask people if they want to talk.
That's exactly what you should be doing. Like, yeah. That's the thing, though. Like, even the shit now, like, I'll get paid occasionally to direct something, but still, 80% of my stuff that I put out is just things that I make with my friends for fun.
Yeah.
You know?
That's interesting, because there's a balance then of what you're putting out there. This is just fun, and it's artistic, and then there's the stuff that's cool, because there's also the making money aspect.
Yeah.
We need to survive.
Yeah.
Do you have gigs that you take that are like, all right, I'm just mostly doing this because I need to eat or it's a good stepping stone?
Yeah, I've definitely done. Luckily with directing, I've only had to do that a couple times with directing, and the results can be all over the place. Honestly, I'm at the point, I mean, I'll still take gigs, honestly, just to pay, but I think when you do take those gigs, when you just take those, like, oh, I'm just gonna, someone's gonna pay me $400 to do this, direct this thing, I think you still have to put in a lot of work. I think that was my downfall. It's like, all right, this is a lot of money, but it'll pay rent for the month, I'll do it, and the results, there's still, I think, a lot of just problems with, like, with the script, like structural stuff, like it's a little bit too ambitious for the time that we have. Like, we can't necessarily, we can't make these days with our budget and with our time restraints, so things like that.
I totally deal with that, you know, as a producer.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have just taken this gig because I wanted to be a capitalist to make money. Like, maybe that wasn't the best idea. But doing the balance, I'm very lucky in the way that podcast producing, this isn't my 9-to-5. It's sort of my 9-to-5. Like, I don't work full time at UCB. I have a lot of free time to do other stuff.
Yeah,
I produce another podcast called The Culture Kings on How Stuff Works. And that's just like, I come in on a Sunday, record, and I send them an edit on Monday, and then I send out my invoice on Tuesday. That's just a gig that I can do.
Right.
Or you also get random acting gigs.
Yeah.
Hey, we could be in this web series on Saturday from like 1 to 5. Like, yeah, sure, whatever. Here's $50. Oh, cool. That paid for my gas for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So I'll just do that. I'm at this stage now where I think it's all really an investment. I think you make things, one, because you want to make them.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. Like, I'm sure you would like to make all the money on this podcast. I'm sure you will get the zig bump. You'll get millions of followers just from this one appearance. But like,
I'm banking on it.
Yeah, yeah. We'll hope you're getting ready to get bumped to the next tax bracket. But I think also, like, you like doing this.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you legitimately have fun doing this. And that's another thing. It's like an investment. So I did 2 pilots last year with some friends just for fun because we liked making this thing.
Yeah.
And it got into some film festivals, which is cool. And nice. Like, it got into like the finalists of a film festival, which is, they had like a monetary prize. But when we made the thing, we weren't like, I hope we can make some money on this thing.
Right.
Like, let's just exercise our voices and make this really weird video because that's what brings us joy.
Yeah.
And like you're saying, people watch this stuff. You'll get meetings from those things, maybe, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
Or it's at least something that you can send to someone, like, hey, me and our friends made this 11-minute pilot for literally $26.
Yeah.
Imagine what we could do with $50, or imagine what we could do with like an actual budget, like $15,000 or whatever.
Totally. I mean, my first feature, we did it with like $1,000.
Yeah.
And like, it's got distribution now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it things become achievable when you're out here, and like, things become doable because you're almost learning. The practice is also becoming practical. Like, you're practicing this thing, but you're also seeing the results of it almost instantaneously.
Yeah. Would you be able to describe the difference between the showrunner and like a director?
Yeah, totally. So for those who don't know, which this is great because a lot of people, like you're saying, like, this isn't just for industry people. So showrunner is literally what it sounds like you're running the show.
Yeah.
Your pretty face was unique in that Casper and Dave were also the directors.
Mm-hmm.
Almost think of like the showrunner as like the general manager. Like,
yeah,
they're managing who's getting hired. Like, they'll usually hire out the writing staff. They'll hire the directors. They'll hire the producers.
Yeah.
They take care of, like, they'll sometimes be the liaison between like the network and like the creatives, which would be the EPs.
Yeah.
So for our show, Chris and Dave were showrunners, EPs, and the writer-directors. So like they had like three slashes in their names.
Right.
You know, so that was a little unique. But this was like a more traditional show where like say Dave was, let's just say Dave was the EP. He was the showrunner for the show, mm-hmm. and I was the director. So I would probably, well, my agency would probably do this, but like we would meet with Dave. He'd see my stuff. He'd be like, hey, I like this and this. I'm going to sign you episodes 204 and episodes 207.
Mm-hmm.
Go out there and do what you got to do. And like, so I would go to set. I'd direct. The writer of that episode would be on set, which they probably honestly would have more power than the director. I think for television directing, it's a lot of, you're not necessarily, and I think as much control as people think you would be on like a traditional film set. Like you're not right. Spielberg on like a television set. You're really there to be like, hey, this is the story. I think the writer can probably has more say than I do. Stand here, do this, say it like this. Let's get this camera angle. Like I think you're there to be as efficient as possible.
Yeah. And
that's sort of the experience that I had when I was doing this web series, is that like you really don't have as much creative control as I would want.
Yeah.
In those situations.
You're not the EP.
Yeah. You're not creating the vision. Like the EP is probably the person that's made like, this is what the world looks like.
Yeah.
Like, they've built all the lore. Like the writers have spent like 2 weeks building out the lore of the show. Like mm-hmm. this thing led to this, and this is the show, and this is how this character blue signifies sadness. So this person always wore, like they're making all those real decisions.
Yeah.
And maybe some directors can get away with that. But like that's generally the breakdown. It's like the showrunners are like the boss of the bosses, and they hire everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting because, like, I haven't done anything for TV
mm-hmm.
Yet. And,
yeah, it's still time.
Exactly. But, like, it's interesting because the directors I work with, they're usually the writers.
Yeah.
They have both of those keys.
Yeah.
And then they can control a lot of it. But when there's so many different roles and it's different from network to network, like mm-hmm. Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Like, Mike Judge, he's the showrunner.
Yeah.
And he doesn't direct all the episodes. Like, mm-hmm. he'll direct a good amount. But that's interesting. Like, did you ever see any... Well, they directed all the episodes. Did they ever...
Yeah. Adult Swim is, at least when I was there, was very unique. So there was... It was Chris and Dave, Matt... And I think one other guy. So there were five in-house writers. There wasn't like a traditional system where you would have like a writer's assistant or anyone to pass along like your knowledge to. It's like Chris and Matt created Aqua Teen.
Yeah.
So that was their show. Then Chris and Casper created Your Pretty Face. Then Dave and the other guy created Squidbilly. So it's like their hands are in it from the very beginning in every single show that they do, their in-house show. So it's very unique in that way. Wait, what was your question? Sorry, I got lost in my own thoughts.
Well, I mean, specifically, I was wondering if they did have a director that wasn't one of them.
Oh.
Like an outside hire kind of director?
No, they didn't, at least for the season that I was on. Mm-hmm. Like, it was Dave and Casper. I think they may have switched to one director per episode after that season, because, I mean, I don't know if that happened in practice. I know credit-wise,
yeah.
It became like, Casper did this episode, Dave did this episode, but I'm sure they were both in the chair at the same time.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I have another question. This is going to sound a little fish, but like...
No, hit me, man.
Okay. What would you say would be your success habits?
My success habits?
Yeah. So like, what do you do that helps you, pushes you? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I would say... This isn't arrogant. I think taste. I think having taste is... not rare, but it's something that is hard to quantify until you realize that it's not there.
Yeah.
And I don't say taste and then like I'm making the dopest shit, y'all look out for me. I'm just saying like I think I'm at the point where I can be like, this doesn't work, and I can break down why it doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
And I think I have enough people that I've made things for that I respect and that are respected in the world of comedy, but like I think that I'm not the authority, but I have an authoritative voice on this. Like
yeah.
If Dave and Casper would be like, hey, I like this short that you made. I'm like, oh, thank you. Like, there are problems with it, and, like, they recognize the problems too. But, like, oh, these people that I enjoy vouch for me, or even Walsh has been like, hey, I like the way that you cut this thing. I'm like, okay, people that have influenced me like the thing that I've made. So, like, I think that I can say with confidence why something does or doesn't work.
Yeah.
That's the one thing, is just having taste. It's just not everyone has it, and it's a thing that you need to have, like, an opinion on something, and you need to have like, you need to be like, yeah, I think this is good, and I think this is why it works, and this is why this thing doesn't work. I think also I'm reliable. the thought of letting someone down fills me with such anxiety.
Yeah.
Like it, like it's almost, it's honestly, it is a fault. Like I shouldn't take things so personal, but I'm like, if I don't answer this email in within 20 minutes, I feel like an asshole. I'm like, this person sent me an email at 6:30. Why didn't I wake up at 7 to answer this email back quickly? You know, things like that.
Yeah.
And also I do hustle. Like I do a lot of different things. I have a lot of fires going off, a lot of plate spinning. Like I, last year was definitely more intense where like I'd come in, I'd work from like noon to 7, like producing podcasts, whatever. And then I'd get off and then I'd cut, like I'd try to get an episode cut of a web series. And then like the next day I'd be like having a meeting with someone, just like buying them coffee, picking their brain. And then like I'd go to set and shoot a thing. And like weekends I'd be knocking out like a short that we shot and like in the valley or whatever. Like it was just like constantly, constantly going.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think, I don't know if everyone should do that, but I think it definitely helps being like, I'm going to put out a lot of stuff and I'm going to make a lot of things and I'm going to see what it's like to like burn at 100%.
Yeah.
That way you can back off and be like, all right, that was not maybe the most healthy thing to do.
Right.
You know, like maybe I shouldn't have gone 100% for 12 months. You know, that's too much for my system.
I mean, it seems like a lot of people in the industry do that. I mean, the people I talk to and the people that I work with, typically they're doing so many things at the same time. Like if they're not writing, if they're not directing, if they're not acting, they're doing so many other things. Like Chris Hardwick.
Yeah.
Like you see that guy.
I don't know how that guy does it. It's wild that he would have like, cause he has the whole Nerdist digital company. He has the podcast. He was hosting At Midnight. He was also doing The Talking Dead. I'm sure he was doing other things. He's almost like The Rock in the way with like, you're like working. So like he wakes up and then works out at like 4 a.m., goes to shoot a movie, hangs out with his kid and his fiance, then goes and does his other thing. And like, that's, I mean, it's paying off, but also I read that Rock article, and I was like, man, when did you get to live? Like, when did you get to, like, let your hair down and be like, oh, okay, just spent the past 7 months grinding so that I could live? And I feel like that's something that maybe I could talk about, is, or at least is my advice, is, like, also not getting lost in the proverbial sauce like that, where like you're constantly working and you're not living.
Yeah.
Like you're like, oh, I can't go out tonight because I told my friend I'd be at his web series at 7 a.m. So I'm going to see you guys, instead of being like, you know what, I'm going to chill and say no to things.
Yeah.
And I can like go watch a movie, or I can go to the beach, or I can go on vacation, or I can just like not leave my bed and play video games all day.
Yeah.
Whatever following your bliss is for that particular moment.
Yeah, I mean, for me, last year, I was doing pre-pro and principal for a feature, and, like, people were like, oh, did you see this movie? And I'm like, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, straight up. And I was doing, I'd finished improv at that time, so I wasn't doing improv at the same time. Now I just fit in 301 into my schedule.
Yeah.
I'm line producing. I'm producing a feature in June.
Yeah.
And I'm just, I could add one more thing.
Yeah. I'm not tired enough.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And then I have those days where all of it hits you at the same time.
Oh boy, that's me. Yeah. I like last year I didn't have any weekends off, and this year I have Saturdays off.
Nice.
But like last weekend I had Saturday and Sunday off, and I was, this is great.
Yeah.
I get to sleep in to like 11. I'm gonna play some video games for like an hour.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go hang out with some friends and get some food. It was great. I'm like, I want more of that in my life actually.
Yeah.
Like that's something that I'm definitely trying to wean more towards this year.
It's interesting because sometimes it's like a grass is greener situation.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Especially when I think about some friends that I went to school with who definitely had the same ambitions but necessarily aren't there yet, or they're doing like, they're like still PAing, or they're like not even in the industry anymore. And you're like, that sucks, because like you had a lot of talent and you were definitely like, there, the seed was there to like to grow. You just needed that shot.
Yeah.
And everyone has their own thing, and I get it. Like, no shade to them. Like,
right.
Follow your bliss and be happy. But I was like, man, it sucks that like they're not doing it. But then a part of me in the back of my mind was like, wouldn't it be great to just, if I could just say fuck it.
Yeah.
And like work in an office. Wouldn't that be great if I could just be like, I'm totally fine with like working 9 to 5 Monday through Friday with a job that I don't really care about, and then like just enjoying the weekend. I wish that I could do that so badly.
Man, but like then you get into it.
It's the worst.
It's the worst. Like it's just like, why am I not on set?
Yeah.
Why am I not doing 14-hour days? And it's so weird. Yeah, it's like grass is greener, and that's all you can really say to it. I mean, I think we're on the right side.
Yeah. I mean,
like,
I'm happy
us,
right now.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
Yeah, yeah. Know? I have a question here that I don't think I'm going to really ask it anymore, because it's, what would you be doing if you're not doing this? And it's,
I don't know.
Right.
I literally have no idea. I could not fathom. I could not fathom being in North Carolina or Atlanta not doing the thing that I want to do. It's,
yeah.
I can't. I literally can't fathom. I don't know what. I have no idea. I have no idea. The whole reason that basically everything that started my journey, I knew like basically halfway through undergrad that I wanted to do film stuff. Like I was doing like TV and radio. I hated news. Like I didn't want to do that stuff.
Yeah.
But I listened to this story that Kevin Smith told, and people have their opinions on Kevin Smith, whatever. But like he had the story he talked about how his dad died. Mm. And like I think his mom and dad were in town, and I think their brother were all staying in the same hotel. And Kevin got a call at like 3 a.m. saying, Kevin, dad's dead. He's in the hospital. Like, oh my God, what happened? He's like, oh, he had a heart attack or whatever. He's like, Kevin, this is fucked up. I don't know if I should tell you this, but like, mom said he woke up in the middle of the night and just saying, he just screamed and said, it burns. And then he dropped fucking dead. He's like, Jesus, oh my God, that's Christ. Terrible. And what Kevin, he was doing like one of his stand up things where he's like talking to the audience. And what I'm saying here is, man, is like, we all die screaming. You need to shoot your shot and do the thing that makes you happy.
Yeah.
It could be moving to LA to be on a film set, or I'm going to take that cooking course, or it could be like, I want to learn Japanese. It could be whatever that thing is. But like, no one's getting out of this thing alive. You might as well do what makes you happy, or at least take some risk.
Yeah.
And like that hit me. I was like, yeah, I think that I'm going to like double down going to film school so I can work in the world that I want to be in, which is making funny things.
Yeah.
Maybe that's been motivating me whenever I'm, is this really worth it? I'm like, we're all going to die. You might as well die happy.
Yeah.
Die doing the thing that you want to do.
Man, I remember I moved here and I got stuck doing the day job
grind. Yeah,
and
yeah,
I was, man, I want to do it. Like, why am I not doing it? And I can't imagine the people that are in those jobs, because there's so many jobs out there that are not dream jobs, are not like what you want to be doing.
Mm.
And it's just strange to me to, okay, what are they thinking?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, and it doesn't have to be film. It could be anything, you know?
Yeah, whatever brings you happiness, you should do.
Yeah.
I've definitely been lucky in that I only had to work a really bad job for a few months before landing a really awesome job. But I definitely have worked. I worked at a call center in between undergrad and grad school, like just having to save up money to move. And it was the absolute worst job I've ever had.
I completely feel you on that. It was a timeshare management company for me.
Oh, God. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I was just talking to people who they already had the timeshares.
Yeah.
Weird red tape. I have real sob stories I can't go into.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just crazy. And those jobs are held by so many people.
Yeah.
And they're there for years sometimes. I did 6 months. I couldn't make it.
I think I did. I was there for, I think, yeah, just 6 months between February, August, I was there, and I could not do it anymore. I was miserable.
Yeah.
You talk to people, they don't want to talk to you, understandably. And like all your coworkers are like mostly like dead-eyed.
Yeah.
And you're like, am I going to be this person? In khaki pants?
Yeah.
Button down?
Yeah, like miserable. Shirt tucked in. Yeah, we're like here like chill.
Yeah.
Recording a podcast. And this is fun.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, man, it's just crazy. Well, we are running out of time. Mm-hmm. So do you have any plugs you want to do?
Oh, wow, plugs. I don't know why I'm surprised by that. That's what we do in every podcast. Yeah, you know, you can follow me on all the socials, like Instagram and Twitter, at YayForZig. Oh, wait, I do have a real plug.
Okay.
I did a show for Soul Pancake 2 years ago that finally got released today.
Oh, nice.
So if you check out Future Puppet News on any of the Soul Pancake feeds, you can find it. I did some voices and some puppeteering for that. That's a really fun show.
Nice.
And it's completely on brand for what I'm into humor-wise.
Yeah. Cool. Are you doing any improv?
I don't do a lot of live. I'm getting back into live stuff, but if you want to hear me improv, you can. This is weird. You can check out UCB Sports and Leisure. I produce that show, and every now and then I'll jump in and do some improv. We have one with Paul F. Tompkins dropping soon that I got to do, which was really surreal. Mm-hmm. You can listen and see if you can hear my heart beating while I'm performing.
Couldn't edit that out.
Yeah, I could not get that out.
Okay, cool.
Oh, this is so much fun, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you so much for being part of it.
Yeah, man. We'll be right back.